Mid-60s Saturday, upper 60s Sunday, sunshine both days, and even nice on Monday and Tuesday as Thanksgiving week begins. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
At Sage Legacy Council, we help families by protecting the assets of loved ones in a nursing home or those in need of long-term care. Call 649-4911. That's 649-4911.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services performed is greater than the quality of legal services performed by other lawyers.
From Alabama News Network, I'm Andrew James. Here's a look at today's headlines. The State Parole Board has submitted a 7-page action plan to address criticism from Governor Kay Ivey. The plan includes training of various personnel and creating a 7-member executive committee to implement improvements. The committee will hold its first meeting in 2 weeks. A Montgomery murder suspect is now in custody. Montgomery police say Christopher Dotson turned himself in Wednesday. He's charged in the shooting death of Adam Jordan. Dotson is being held on $150,000 bond. And the Salvation Army of Montgomery is preparing for the cold weather. They expect more people to show up to the shelter as the temperatures drop. The shelter will be open as a warming station if temperatures dip below freezing. And that's a look at today's headlines. For more on these stories and others, watch Alabama News Network on CBS 8 and ABC 32. I'm Andrew James.
The following is a paid program. All content is provided by Dan Morris Productions and does not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WACV Radio, Blue Water Broadcasting, or Liberty Acquisitions 825.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Christy here from Blue Water Broadcasting. A little better weather than the past few days, even though it is still very, very, very cold. We are out here on location right now at Jack Ingram Motors, the Mercedes-Benz dealership on Eastern Boulevard, and we're going to be here until 1 o'clock. I know it's cold. A lot of you came out and dropped off your food donations in the rain the past few days, and we certainly appreciate your dedication and your generosity. And hey, look, we only have a few more days left of the annual holiday food drive. Now, even though we stop our on locations on Friday, you can still donate through the weekend. So make sure you come. Don't let up. We need as many non-perishables as we possibly can get. So please come by Jack Ingram Motors, a Mercedes-Benz dealership on Eastern Boulevard until 1 o'clock. Hope to see you very soon. Christy here, Blue Water Broadcasting.
Give joy, get joy at Kohl's Friends and Family Sale this weekend and get ready for holiday hosting with an extra 20% off. Pick up a new Shark vacuum or a roaster oven. And with an extra 20% off, twin sheets are just $17.59. Plus, take an extra $10 off your $50 or more home purchase. Give joy, get joy at Kohl's. Select styles. Offers valid November 16th through 18th. 20% offer with promo code SHOPPERS. Home offer with promo code HOME10. Some exclusions apply. See store or Kohl's.com for details.
Right now at the Home Depot, get up to 40% off appliance special buys, plus up to $500 in instant savings, like a GE Appliances high-efficiency top-load washer and electric dryer. Right now, just $4.28 each. Black Friday priced early. This is how to clean up for the holidays with Black Friday savings on appliances. Now at the Home Depot. More saving. More doing. U.S. only while supplies last. Gas dryer extra. Instant savings require a minimum purchase of 2 select appliances to qualify. See store for details. Valid through November 29th.
Hey, River Region. Dave Ramsey here. The thing about Christmas is it's the same time every year. This means you have absolutely no excuse not to plan ahead and budget for gifts. I recommend you visit my friends at Southern Homes and Gardens, Alabama's premier Christmas store. Southern Homes and Gardens is locally owned and operated for over 38 years. And they carry a huge variety of long-lasting, lifelike Christmas trees, always 50% off. You can also get gorgeous poinsettias and holiday greenhouse favorites for your gift buying. They have a wide selection of budget-friendly pre-wrapped gifts, plus an endless selection of store-wide gift specials, up to 50% off and on-site personalization. Choose from exquisite decor and hundreds of ornaments. So visit Southern Homes and Gardens today. Call 334-387-0440. Or visit SouthernHomesAndGardens.com. Tell them Dave sent you.
The premier place the River Region turns to for news, weather, traffic, and opinion. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, has been taken into custody by police in Los Angeles on suspicion of domestic violence.
Winter is here.
It is the first significant storm of the season.
Over 80 million people under some type of winter alert.
Terror rages on in California.
Hundreds still unaccounted for.
Defense Secretary Mattis is at the border in Texas.
In Tijuana, the first of the migrant caravan has made it to the border.
President Trump striking a bipartisan tone, throwing his support behind legislation on prison sentence reform that's backed by members of both parties.
Authorities are investigating a mysterious death at Ohio University after Colin Wyant, an 18-year-old freshman, was found unresponsive in this off-campus apartment on Monday.
CNN versus Trump, a hearing in a U.S. District Court in Washington taking place.
This comes after the White House removed Jim Acosta's press pass.
The Harlem man who won New York's largest jackpot has now claimed his prize worth a record $343.8 million.
It's the Dan Morris Show. Join the conversation by calling 272-9228. And now, here's Dan Morris.
35 degrees outside. So I'm going to send 112 points. Let me bring in Mr. Producer himself. The one and only Joey Clark.
Hello.
How are you doing on this cold, wet day?
I'm doing all right. I wish it wasn't wet.
Yeah, that's it. And boy, when I went out this morning and the wind was blowing, right, it cut right through me. It was 31 degrees when I woke up at 6.
And morning. Maybe it's because I've been doing the cryo chamber all summer, but when I walked outside today, I was like, oh, it's cold, but I'm good.
No big deal, huh?
I'm good. I'm used to it. And it's just the wet. I get tired of all the condensation on the car and just...
You can't say all your windows in your house.
Right.
Crazy stuff out here. But
did you notice a flurry or two? I did when I went outside. I could see it on the top of my car on the black. Yeah, there were tiny flurries that would melt immediately, but it was ice.
Wow. Yeah. No, did not see that. Yeah. Maybe not in my house. May have too many trees where they can't get down to ground level yet.
I mean, it was the size that would normally be like mist if it was just warm enough. So, but it was tiny ice particles.
Huh. I did not see that. Hmm. But
not enough to cover anything, obviously. And I don't like it when it snows around here because it's too wet.
Well, it gets too wet and people get crazy. People drive and... Oh, man, I told you about the friend of mine up in Bloomington, Illinois. He calls me, FaceTime me early this morning, and it snowed all night last night, so she had like 6 inches of snow in her driveway. How do I shovel snow? So I gave her a snow shoveling lesson there.
Oh, good luck.
She said, girls from Mississippi aren't supposed to be in states like Illinois.
About to say, I hope you have some boots. And
yeah,
some
she
pants.
Did. She was decked out. She had the right, she went to the coat factory thing and got this just looked like an Arctic, like he was going to Ice Station Zebra or something like that. Okay, 272-9228, first time callers need to let Joey, the producer, know, and you may be as lucky as Linda, who won two, and win the Fresh Market Pitch Alley gift card. Then also we have open for every caller that says something and has a conversation with me, the Sweet Creek Farm Market gift basket. What is in that gift basket? Things that you put in there. How about that? Up to a value of $60. And they've got the greatest camp stew on a day like today. If I didn't have my haircut appointment, I would be down there in a skinny minute to go get some camp stew. Because Joey and I were talking off mic. This kind of weather makes me want to do comfort food.
Absolutely.
So I need to come up with some fun thing to cook tonight that's in the comfort zone.
Stew, chili, I love a hearty mac and cheese or something like that.
Ooh.
I always go to pasta, like warm pasta.
Warm pasta? Ooh, yeah, that Vinegier Gouda mac and cheese with Gouda. It is delicious. Ooh. I never forget the time I took my son there and I said they had mac and cheese, Daniel, with Gouda in it. He goes, don't tease me, Dad. Don't tease me.
You keep talking like this, we'll just keep making guttural noises on the show.
We're going to have Dr. David Sorensen calling in just a little bit to talk about several things. The Khashoggi situation where Saudi equivalent of their attorney general, their prosecutor, is charging five people and seeking the death penalty, but charged a total of 11 people. Remember, we predicted that when this thing was going down, the Crown Prince was going to be doing some throwing under the bus kind of stuff. So I wonder if they're in jail, but the jail looks a lot like a house.
Right.
Or a palace or something like that. Because I can't imagine that he's going to actually whack these guys.
In one of those high-rise prisons.
Yeah.
But you think it's nice, but do you see that balcony? We could throw you at any point.
Just to make you feel good about yourself. The Florida recount is going on. Michael Avenatti got arrested yesterday. And the way the press handled the story is amazing to me. You're going to get the piece, and then you're going to get another piece, and then you're going to get the way they presented it together under the title of Michael Avenatti Gets Arrested. It was absolutely amazing. Catherine Harris, a name out of the past, she was the Secretary of State in Florida during the 2000 recount. She's going to be on and talking. They're doing an interview with her. Kevin McCarthy, and boy, the CBS people, women in particular, were going after Kevin McCarthy. You don't have enough women. You don't have enough diversity. All sorts of stuff. And then the piece on Trump did yesterday on the sentencing reform.
Yes, it was great.
It was great. Barely mention on C. I mean, this was a bipartisan, bicameral act here.
It's what we would suspect everybody wants to a certain degree, that the Congress is doing something productive that actually improves everybody's lives. Law enforcement likes it. Civil rights activists like it. Everybody should like it. And yet, the things we like don't get reported on.
Well, and this might pass with it like a 75-82 vote in the Senate.
Yes, absolutely.
Unbelievable. Let's go to a break and we'll wait on Dr. David Sorensen. Talk to him right after this.
Show.
Turn on. Tune in.
News Talk 93.1 FM.
Want to carry News Talk in your pocket? Download the News Talk 93.1 app from the App Store. Available on iPhone and Android. Never miss a moment. Download now.
What do you call a turkey the day after Thanksgiving?
I don't know. What?
Lucky.
The day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, start of the Christmas shopping season. At Brubaker Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, this can be your lucky day. No joke. It's the Black Friday sales event with deals all month long at Brubaker Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. You can save $15,000 on all 2018 and 2019 Ram 1500 Bighorns. Built for work or play, the Ram 1500 Bighorn has relentless capability and streamlined performance. And for a limited time, receive 25% off all 2019 Jeep Cherokees in stock. The Jeep Cherokee mixes off-road capability with mainstream appeal. The Black Friday sales event with deals all month long at Brubaker Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Better vehicles, better service, better pricing. It's a better buy at Brubaker. Plus, tag, title, and fees. Must finance with Chrysler Capital. Savings off list price, not MSRP. Offer expires November 30th.
Many people here in the Montgomery area are looking for a new dentist. Some of you may have just moved into the area, or your dentist may be about to retire, or maybe it's just too hard to get an appointment with your dentist. The Dan Morris Show has a personal recommendation just for you. Dr. Dan Hudson of Bill Road Family Dentistry. He is a sole practitioner dentist with a heart for his patients. Maybe you need a checkup, or you may need to have crowns or cosmetic dentistry. Dr. Dan Hudson can handle your case. He is a complete dentist who has the latest and most up-to-date dental equipment. It can do crowns in just one appointment, saving you time and money. But the real secret of Dr. Dan Hudson's success is his staff. You'll love the staff of Bell Road Family Dentistry. You aren't just a patient number, but a part of the family of the Bell Road Family Dentistry practice. You'll love this former member of the Special Forces. Resources, who is dedicated to your dental health. Call 395-6695 to set up a consultative appointment. Dr. Dan Hudson, Bell Road Family Dentistry, 395-6695. He will make your smile.
Trustworthy, accurate, immediate. Carrying your voice across the river region. News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Saudi Arabia's top prosecutor has just announced new charges in last month's killing of Washington Post contributor Jamal Khashoggi. He wants five of the suspects to face the death penalty for the killing and dismembering of Khashoggi, who was a critic of the Saudi crown prince and the de facto ruler. Holly Williams is in Saudi Arabia's capital, Riyadh, and joins us this morning.
This is the first official acknowledgement from Saudi Arabia that Jamal Khashoggi's body was dismembered after he was killed inside the Saudi Arabian consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, though that is what Turkish officials have been saying for weeks. According to Saudi Arabia's top prosecutor, the country's former deputy head of intelligence, a figure thought to have been close to Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, gave an order for Khashoggi to be brought back to Saudi Arabia by force if necessary. The reason was apparently his work for foreign media. But instead, it's claimed Khashoggi was given an anesthetic injection that killed him. That contradicts a previous Saudi statement that he died in a fistfight. Remember also that it took Saudi Arabia more than 2 weeks to admit that Khashoggi had been killed. Saudi Arabia has come under international pressure, including from the US, its most important ally, to explain how and why Jamal Khashoggi was killed. But today's statement still doesn't tell us the names of the accused, their positions in the government, or tell us where Jamal Khashoggi's body ended up.
You know, whenever we have a question in the Middle East, you know who our go-to person is. The man who has almost never has failed us here, but has all the answers, Dr. David Sorensen. Dr. Sorensen, welcome aboard the Dan Moore Show.
Thanks, Dan. You set high expectations for me. I'll have to live up to it.
There you go. You have never let us down. Dr. Sorensen, I was really taken that they are seeking the death penalty on five and have basically indicted a total of 11. Is this a big throw people under the bus to save the Crown Prince?
I think it is. I think that Saudi Arabia is used to doing things in the cover of secrecy, and I think the public exposure has revealed how poor Saudi Arabia is in trying to come up with a fabricated cover story for what was essentially a political murder, because a lot of things just don't add up. I think they may find five people in a Saudi prison and dress them up like the people they're charging and execute them. But the people who were involved in the murder are high-level officials. I think the answer that the Turks have given us is that this was very carefully pre-planned. Didn't go very well, but for one thing, they have intercepted a message that says, tell your boss the deed is done. The boss is very likely to be the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman. It's also kind of unusual to go in and arrest a guy and let it take you back alive to Saudi Arabia when you go into the embassy with a forensic anthropologist with a bone saw and apparently a vat of acid. Because Turkey actually got into the consulate living quarters of Saudi Arabia in Istanbul. They got into the drain and they found quite a bit of hydrofluoric acid, which they apparently used to take the body, cut it up, put it in the bathtub, and then dissolve it. So there is no more body. They just washed it down the drain, but there were traces. I know this sounds grim, but the evidence is really quite good that this was pre-planned. And finally, they had they brought somebody along to dress up as Khashoggi to be seen walking out of the embassy. So there was a lot of effort both to dismember him, to murder him, and then to try to cover up the crime. So to say, well, we found five guys that we're going to give the death penalty for and 11 total that we're indicting, I think, quite frankly, is an effort to try to cover up what was a very carefully planned murder.
You know, what you said, to find five guys and dress them up like the other folks and execute them, is exactly what I said right after it happened, that they're eventually going to have to get to a fall guy and that they're going to have to kill. Now, one of these people is a high intelligence officer. Wouldn't we know who he is? And if he's walking around, we know that he didn't get killed?
I think what they'll do, first of all, the Ministry of Intelligence in Riyadh is a very hard building to get into. I've only gotten in there once. And they can simply house him there and try to disguise his entry and exit until this all kind of blows over. Or they may take him to give him another house to live in so he's not seen. Again, Saudi Arabia is a place where privacy is absolutely prized over almost anything else. When a Saudi Arabian builds a house, the first thing that goes up is the wall around it.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from the personal level to the state level, and it's very hard to get good information, particularly on people who work in the Ministry of Intelligence. It's a building that looks like a big UFO in the middle of Riyadh, kind of eyes on the top, which symbolizes its mission. We're watching you, but you can't see us. So I think, again, they'll find some prisoners and execute them so it can be seen to be done. But I think in the end, the fingerprints are the crown prince. And two interesting advisors who have taken tremendous power are really the ones who planned all this out.
Well, they said in the news report that the guy that was in charge of the intelligence, he was kind of the ringleader of this, and as they're saying, the crown prince knew nothing about it, and he did this all on his own. So he would have been kind of the mastermind, wouldn't he?
He would have been. And again, this was not particularly well planned. What they also apparently didn't recognize is that Turkey monitors very carefully every embassy and every consulate. They have listening devices, they monitor, they know who goes in and out, partly because they're afraid of Turks defecting or members of this Gulenist group coming in. So Saudi Arabia didn't seem to understand that whatever went on inside the consulate in Istanbul, the Turks knew about. And that's really what kind of blew the whistle on all of this. And the Turks have turned over the recordings to the U.S., to Canada, apparently to the European Union. So the evidence is pretty good, and again, Saudi Arabia apparently just didn't recognize the degree to which this murder was going to be recorded.
Now, I saw it pass on the wire, but I didn't get enough time to read the story, that the U.S. took some action against 16 people that were supposed to be involved in this about seizing assets and sanctions against them. Is that going to be effective?
Probably not. Yes, these individuals, including two kind of shady characters who are involved with the crown prince, neither again from the royal family. There's a guy named Saud al-Khani and another guy named Turki al-Sheikh. They're really described as thugs and extremists, one of whom is a poet who masterminds the social media campaign, and the other is a former security guy, and it is believed that they, more than anybody else, are urging the crown prince to engage in this kind of behavior. So the U.S. has seized assets of Saud al-Khatani, and they're going after Turki al-Sheikh. But again, these guys have hidden bank accounts. There's always a paycheck from the crown prince that will get around whatever sanctions. So I think it's difficult to sanction these guys individually. We can seize bank accounts or property that they have in the United States. We can't stop the crown prince or anybody else from essentially repaying them for whatever the U.S. sanctions. So I understand, approve of the action, but again, I think the reach of the United States is really limited in this and other cases.
How, in your opinion, does this end? I don't see how the suspicion about the crown prince goes away.
I think that's exactly correct. I think that what Saudi Arabia, what the crown prince is expecting and hoping for, is this will kind of blow away. He's seen that news like this tends to have a short shelf life on the headlines, and I think they're hoping that they can persuade the United States that they're a major arms purchaser, that they're a major friend of the United States in the region, that they've tried to improve ties to Israel. and consequently this will blow away. I think if it doesn't, there may be a move to try to replace the crown prince or at least take away some of his titles. He may be the crown prince, but they'll remove him as Minister of Defense and Intelligence and all the other portfolios that he has. That'll be mostly a symbolic gesture. And if that doesn't work, I expect that ultimately some in the royal family will attempt to fire him. The problem is that other people in the royal family really have been neutered, partly by the crown prince himself. Their property's been taken, their titles have been taken. And the question really is there enough power in the other parts of the royal family to really go after this 33, 34-year-old crown prince who has in many ways grabbed power in a way that we have not seen in Saudi Arabia since its founding in 1932.
And knowing the way the royal family works, what do you think the king is saying here? Do you think he's, because he has always had this, I want Saudi Arabia to be accepted and to be a part of the 21st century, and this seems to be going backwards.
If the king is aware, and I say that because the king is reported to have dementia or Alzheimer's or perhaps both, I think he may be a bit alarmed about what's going on, because you're exactly right. King Salman, more than his predecessors, really wanted to see Saudi Arabia as a legitimate player in the world, a country that was moving to modernity, a country that was a faithful partner to the United States, and improving relations with Israel. And this is really causing it to go south. And again, I think everybody miscalculated, but the problem is that we don't know what the king is being told, because the crown prince may well control the means of communication and may control who goes to see the king. And again, we just don't know what his mental condition is right now. He is elderly. Again, I met him many years ago. He's sharp as a tack when he was lucid. But again, age takes its toll.
As we all know, right?
As we all know, yes, indeed. I find it interesting that there has been no demonstrable pushback that would suggest that the king has called in the crown prince and said, okay, you've really made some serious mistakes. I'm going to remove your portfolio, or in the end, I'm going to put your half-brother back in line as the crown prince. None of that has happened, which makes me think that the king either doesn't understand what's going on or just mentally can't accept it and respond to it.
Let me ask this question. What would happen if something happened to the king? Would the crown prince ascend at that moment?
Yes, that is the expectation, and that's almost always happened. When the king has died, the crown prince has almost always stepped in. The only time that didn't happen is the crown prince died right before the king, so they had to go find another one. But for the most part, the crown prince is the one who's designated. When they designate a crown prince, and all this goes on inside walls, and there's very little transparency, almost none. It is assumed that when that happens, all the other members of the royal family come in and they give what is known as bayat, or a pledge of loyalty to the crown prince. And that essentially means, I promise not to oppose you, I won't undermine you, I accept you as the crown prince. It's interesting that when that happened, the removed crown prince, Prince Mohammed bin Nayef, was seen giving bait to the crown prince, and one of the crown prince's enforcers was standing right behind him. And the message was, if you don't do that, you could disappear too. So, again, it is not impossible to envision a situation where the king dies, the crown prince is then removed or assassinated, which hasn't happened, but it could. And somebody like the crown prince's half-brother, the former crown prince, might be put on the throne in the name of stability, in part.
Wouldn't that, the intrigue with this whole thing, I mean, if I'm the crown prince and I have a dark heart enough to, I'm going to go whack a guy and cut him up into pieces, isn't another way to solve this whole problem is all of a sudden the king gets a cold and dies?
Could happen. That certainly could happen. I don't know that much about the relationship with his father. The only thing I found interesting, and again, this is a long time ago, when I met with the king before he was the king, he spoke in glowing terms of his other son, who was an astronaut never mentioned Mohammed bin Salman. Mohammed bin Salman was pretty young when I was there, which tells you how old I am. But he never mentioned his younger son. That was kind of interesting. So I don't know what the relationship is and whether or not Mohammed bin Salman would actually try to bump off his father or not.
Man.
It's possible that somebody else, one of his inner circle, and again, some of these guys are real thugs. It's not impossible to think that they might slip the poison pill in.
This is fascinating. Dr. Sorensen, can I get to a break and come back to you? I have several
Absolutely.
Additional questions. News Talk 93.1, Dr. David Sorensen, our Middle East expert, on the phone with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Dan Morris Show on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
What do you get with Greg, Rich, Jay, and Emily Hayes? Three men and a lady. Mornings, 6 to 9 on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Hi, I'm David Woods, and I want to invite you to get your news, weather, and sports 1 hour earlier on the WCOV News at 9.
Diversity in the workplace was on the minds of hundreds of people attending a diversity summit in the capital city.
We cover the news of the day while shining a light on those who are helping to make Montgomery a better place.
A future in manufacturing as a skilled worker could be one of their next moves.
And they care about what goes on in a community.
Join us on the WCOV News at 9 on Fox 20.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. President Trump, in a series of posts on Twitter, is again attacking the special counsel Russian election meddling investigation, calling it a total mess.
He continued, "They are a disgrace to our nation and don't care how many lives they ruin. These are angry people, including the highly conflicted Bob Mueller, who worked for Obama for 8 years, he wrote. Mueller, a Republican, was originally named FBI director by President George W. Bush.
Fox's John Decker at the White House. A machine recount of ballots in Florida is done or close to it in most counties, with the deadline for finishing that work today at 3 o'clock Eastern Time.
Questions remain about Palm Beach County, which has had problems in their counting machines doing the work needed to be done. If any statewide race still does not produce a winner with more than a quarter percentage point lead, a hand recount will be legally recommended. That is expected to start Friday morning and could go on for a very long time.
That's Evan Brown. This is Fox News.
Rich Thomas Weather, a service of Wiley Sanders Trucking, right now offering top pay of 45.5 cents per mile and quarterly and annual safe driving bonuses. Apply today at WileySanders.com.
Rich Thomas Weather.
Hi, everybody. Breezy and cold today, a raw winter's day. I still think we're going to see some sunshine before all is said and done. Our high temperature will be hard-pressed to make it to 40 today, but northwest winds 10 to 15 will make it seem colder. Tonight, mostly clear, a freeze warning in effect, the first freeze of the season, widespread frost after midnight, overnight low temperature 30 by dawn in the morning. Tomorrow, abundant sunshine, nice recovery, high around 58. Tomorrow night's low 37. Beautiful Saturday and Sunday. Mid-60s Saturday, upper 60s Sunday, sunshine both days, and even nice on Monday and Tuesday as Thanksgiving week begins. From the Blue Water Weather Center, this is Rich Thomas.
All the headlines the mainstream media won't touch. Your News Talk station. News Talk 93.1 FM WACV.
Now back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
Joey is getting his voice heard through his music here.
Yep, the stranglehold wasn't too on the nose.
272-9228, Dr. David Sorensen in the house are on the phone with us talking about situation with the Crown Prince in Saudi Arabia, what may be happening next here. Dr. Sorensen, it seems that during when the heads of state were meeting that Erdogan brought over the audio tapes so the other heads of state could hear this, and John Bolton said he did not hear the part where he said, "Tell your boss the mission is done," and I haven't heard anybody else talk about that other than the media saying that it was in there. Is it possible that Turkey could have made that up?
It's possible. I think if that was the strongest piece of evidence, then yeah, I would be a little bit suspicious. I understand that the French President Macron has heard it. I understand that the Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau has heard it. I don't know who else had. But I think when you add up everything else, that this appeared to be a team of assassins ready to go into the embassy, kill Khashoggi, either strangle him or give him a shot. The stories vary. And dismembered the body, carried the body over to the consulate living quarters and dissolved it, and then tried to disguise a guy as Khashoggi. I think all that adds up to pretty good evidence that this was a pre-planned murder. And whether or not they said, tell the boss the deed is done, we don't know exactly who the boss was. So that's not the most definitive piece of evidence, but I think everything else adds up to the reality that this was a pre-planned murder.
Do you think this puts us in a situation where we cannot trust Saudi Arabia?
I think on this, I think Saudi Arabia is just blundering in a public relations disaster. President Trump himself said, this is the worst cover-up I've ever seen. And that's pretty bad.
That is.
So I think that President Trump is right. This is just a very clumsy effort at public diplomacy, which Saudi Arabia really doesn't do very well. Again, there's just no experience in it. I think in the end, Saudi Arabia's been... it's been a challenge. Again, it's had friendly relations with the United States, but there have been some speed bumps along the way to go back to the 70s. There have been times where defense contracts we thought were signed, sealed, and delivered, and then all of a sudden they came back and wanted renegotiation at the point where you don't do renegotiation anymore. So they've got their own interest, and there isn't all that much trust in some of the ministries between Saudi Arabia and the United States. I think they're a useful partner. On the other hand, there are things that they are doing that are simply not helpful to American interests. The campaign in Yemen, for example, and certainly the murder of a journalist who lived in Virginia and who wrote for the Washington Post is certainly put a strain on those relationships. And I think the president's articulated that pretty well.
You know, if he ascends to the throne, I mean, it sounds like this guy has a taste for blood here. And that makes me really, really concerned about Yemen and some of the, quote, accidents that have happened over there. If they're not just a bloodthirsty attempt to just to shock the people and to terrorize the people there in Yemen.
Yes. The campaign in Yemen has been brutal. 16,000 Yemeni, mostly civilian, have died. 4 million are on the brink of starvation. They're lacking medical care. Even the old parts of Sana'a have been bombed, mostly by Saudi Arabian and, to a lesser extent, UAE aircraft. The issue is that the United States has been refueling those aircraft. We have air-to-air refueling capacity that Saudi Arabia just doesn't have. And as you may know, there was a vote in the House to invoke the War Powers Act that goes back to the 70s,
right,
to at least question the funding for this. The vote did not pass. I suspect it will come up again because it's not a big role for the United States, but it is a role, and without it, it's not clear that Saudi Arabia could carry out the kinds of attacks they are. Now, Saudi Arabia claims they are limiting the influence of Iran because Iran has been backing the Shia rebels who are fighting against the government forces, such as they are in Yemen. The problem is that they're mixed in with the population. The problem is that Yemen is an extraordinarily poor country in the Arab world, and the bombing has been indiscriminate. I've looked at pictures of parts of old Sana'a where I used to go through, and it goes back to the 8th century, and they're just obliterating it. The death toll among children is especially, Yemen has a very high reproduction rate, and so there's lots of kids, and unfortunately those kids are not doing all that well. So I think there's a real concern that the United States perhaps needs to step in and say, understand that you're trying to limit Iranian influence, But by killing civilians and inflicting this kind of almost random damage and death, it is not helping you or the United States, since the United States has been supplying them with gas, weapons, and aircraft.
Let me go back to something that I think you said. Would they be able to carry out the mission in Yemen, their mission in Yemen, if we were not supporting them?
It'd be a lot harder. They're flying out of bases in southern Saudi Arabia, Khamis Mashat, for example, which is kind of down on the Yemeni border. But they would probably not be able to fly as long without air-to-air refueling. And it's not clear who is providing the targeting information. The United States has provided them with targeting information in the past. I don't know that that's happening now. But I think if we were to withhold that, I'm not sure it would make it any better. They might still drop bombs. But I think it's important to emphasize that this was a decision made by the Crown Prince when he became the defense minister. He was the one who ordered Saudi Arabian forces to go in. And they were in there before. It didn't turn out all that well. They kind of withdrew the forces. They kind of hoped that the Yemeni, the remnants of the old Yemeni Republican government could push back against the Houthi. And it was kind of a stalemate. It was the current Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, who ordered this big increase in air attacks in particular in coordination with the United Arab Emirates. So, and there are Saudi Arabian forces on the ground. There are Emirate forces on the ground. So it has really become a kind of a quagmire. Some have described it as Saudi Arabia's Vietnam because they're really not doing all that well. The Houthi are fighting back determinedly as they have for centuries. And Saudi Arabia is beginning to take a black eye. And I think it's making it harder for the United States to continue to support that level of effort.
Is Saudi Arabia putting ground troops in there, or they're strictly doing an air campaign?
They do have ground troops. We don't know how many. Unfortunately, we know that there are some ground troops because there has been some terrible friendly fire, fratricide. Some of the Saudi aircraft have hit Saudi ground troops on the ground by accident. So I don't know how many there are, but there are ground forces there.
Let's move to Israel and Hamas and the ceasefire and the defense minister resigning. Do you sense that Israel and Hamas are coming close to an agreement to kind of settle things down, or what do you think is happening here?
I think they are. I think this is a remarkable use of diplomacy after Hamas fired a whole bunch of rockets into Israel. There's been quite a non-combat time from the last time I was in Israel. There had been very few rocket attacks, partly because Israel would retaliate and partly because Israel has established a pretty robust missile defense system that tends to knock these things down. But for reasons that we don't quite know, my sense is it was Islamic Jihad and not Hamas. They did attack in southern Israel. They hit Sderot, they hit Beersheba, they hit several other towns. Killed at least one Israeli and some Arabs who were working in Israel. The Israeli Defense Forces retaliated back. They had a limited strike into Gaza. And then very quickly, diplomatic efforts started, led by Egypt, with participation from Norway and also from the state of Qatar. Very quickly, surprisingly quickly, Prime Minister Netanyahu and the leaders of Hamas agreed to a ceasefire. That has not happened before. I think the reason was that previous experience says that both sides are going to lose if the Israelis go in and attack Gaza again, which they've done, and it's turned out badly for both sides. What's interesting is that a lot of the population in southern Israel, which has come under Hamas rocket attack or Islamic Jihad rocket attack, were furious about the ceasefire. They wanted the Israelis to go in and do a lot more retaliation and cause a lot more damage. Folks in northern Israel fear rockets from Hezbollah, the Lebanese Shia militia. They were more supportive of the ceasefire because they saw this thing escalating to the point where they would come under rocket attacks too. But what is especially interesting is that most members of Prime Minister Netanyahu's cabinet opposed the ceasefire. Avigdor Lieberman, who is the defense minister, has resigned. What that means is he's taken his party out of Netanyahu's coalition. His parties are kind of a right-wing, conservative, pro-Israel, not necessarily Jewish party called Israel is Our Home or Yisrael B'tanu. That has left Netanyahu's coalition with one vote in the Knesset. And if he loses that one vote, then they'll have to call new elections and nobody knows what's going to happen. But it's also interesting that the educational minister, Naftali Bennett, justice minister, Eilat Shaked, and the Jerusalem Affairs minister, members of Netanyahu's own party, have all said, we oppose the ceasefire. The story is that Netanyahu apparently locked his cabinet in the conference room for hours, demanding that they approve it. And again, many of them did not. So as it stands now, the ceasefire seems to be holding. And I think, again, and both sides understand the danger of escalating. The real casualty has been Netanyahu's political coalition, which, again, stands now to fall apart. So there are those who said that Avigdor Lieberman's departure is a good thing. He is fairly radical. He wanted to disenfranchise the Arab population of Israel to take away their citizenship. That's 20% of Israel's population. And then other things that in some ways did not endear him even to the other conservatives in Netanyahu's coalition. So there are some who are saying good riddance, goodbye. Well, Netanyahu could take the job himself. No hard feelings. But again, it is a shakeup in Israeli politics.
And looking at this, do you think Netanyahu's purpose was strictly ceasefire, or do you think they're getting to a point that maybe they're coming up with a solution on Palestine?
It's unclear. We know that the president, President Trump, has articulated the desire for some kind of a political agreement between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. In the Israeli paper today, there's a story that says it's still on track, despite the fact that there hasn't really been any visible movement. And that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes you don't want to see public movement because things are happening privately. I have not heard anything that strikes me as a settlement that both the Israelis and the Palestinians might accept. But who knows? It may be going on behind closed doors in secrecy. And I think that if Netanyahu sees that as a possibility, that may be one reason why he did agree to the ceasefire. But I also think he feared very much escalation, because escalation with the Palestinians, either in the West Bank or Gaza, has toppled governments before, both conservative and labor. So I think Netanyahu was especially concerned about this becoming a conflict without an end, possibly joined by Hezbollah. Not entirely like Netanyahu. I was a little bit surprised that he allowed for a ceasefire as quickly into the conflict as he did. Again, the damage and the death toll are much, much lower than previous conflicts. So I think he was both protecting his political flank against the possibility that this could escalate and get out of hand. But he may also have had a peace agreement with the Palestinians as a longer-term goal when he decided this.
Dr. Sorensen, I want to thank you for calling in today and giving us so much knowledge. And we're going to watch the Hamas and the Palestine-Israel situation, because that did seem odd to me. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure, and thank you for having me, Dan.
Dr. David Sorensen, ladies and gentlemen, a Middle East expert and good friend to the show. We're going to be back right after this.
You're listening to The Dan Morris Show on News Talk 93.1 WACV.
Giving voice to liberty in our time. The Joey Clark Radio Hour. Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
At Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars, it's all about buying confidence and trust. For over 50 years, they've offered a great selection of the finest and best hand-picked cars in the area. These cars have passed a rigid multi-point inspection and are backed by value pricing and the Jack Ingram Signature Car Stamp of Approval. Choose from the largest selection of Nissan, Volkswagen, Volvo, Audi, and Porsche certified vehicles in our area, or shop hundreds of other pre-owned makes starting as low as $7,000. And if it doesn't fit in your garage or your spouse doesn't like it, you have 5 days to return it for a full refund. 5 days to drive and decide. Need another reason to shop at Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars? They're the area's largest buyer of used cars. Value pricing that can't be beat. 50 plus years of service to our community, a 5-day return policy, credit options for everyone, and a huge inventory of cars, trucks, and SUVs.
Come see me, Tip Thames, at Jack Ingram Signature Used Cars on Eastern Boulevard, or shop online at jackingram.com.
Mileage restrictions apply. See dealer for details.
Your News Talk place to be. The Dan Morris Show, noon till 3. Only on News Talk 93.1 FM, WACV.
Now, back to Dan Morris on News Talk 93.1, WACV.
I want to thank Dr. David Sorensen for calling in today. Wow. Joey, that's a lot of information.
Yes, yes it is.
It, can you pop me up a little bit? Thank you. The Crown Prince, I mean, this guy just seems to have a bloodthirsty attitude, and if he ascends to the throne, you know, how do we manage that?
Well, and it's ironic, isn't it, that because he's bloodthirsty, he probably will ascend to the throne.
I tell you what, I'd keep an eye on old Pops there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the guy's going to get somebody and cut him out, because you know they had to go in and say, this is what we're going to do. And he'd go, oh, I like that.
Well, and it is frustrating because there are some good trends in Saudi Arabia, and we can't, you know, make the perfect the enemy of the good here. So if there is some sort of progress, some kind of progress, maybe we don't pull and cut and run completely. But my worry is we've been playing this game in the Middle East now for nearly a century. I mean, a little less than that.
You look the other way?
Yeah, or play both sides. Play the side that we think we can get the best out of for a decade or two. And for a while, Iraq was in the middle of that picture, no longer. But I get the idea of counterbalancing Iran with Saudi Arabia. I get the idea of, oh, now that Saudi Arabia and Israel are closer and tight-knit, there might be some progress to be made, but I don't know. It always is more a little more complicated than that. Especially the way this Crown Prince is behaving. It's difficult to wrap my head around, is this actually going to lead to good things?
Well, this is one of those things that, you know, you're known by the friends that you keep. And if we're looking at Saudi Arabia as being one of our top allies that are out there, and we're not, and we're dealing with a bloodthirsty person that's there, then that isn't going to play well.
Well, and let's be clear, this isn't the same thing as, say, the Egyptian government run by its military cracking down. That's still pretty, you know, gruesome, but necessary in a way. It's not the King of Jordan being, you know, a strong arm when he needs to be. This is a guy on a very public international stage killing somebody, criticizing him and calling for a free press in the Arab world. That's a little beyond.
Something's isn't quite right, as
right.
I say.
And it's funny how we get that way. How, like, if we see a Middle East government cracking down on its citizens protesting, we're going to like, well, what's new? But then when you see somebody that blatantly killing somebody who is, for all intents and purposes, a Western journalist, it should make you unnerved. And then the way Erdogan's playing it up, like he's calling the Saudis out. Yeah, they caught him red-handed, but Erdogan's jailed more journalists than anybody else in the Middle East in the last few years.
I remember before the hostages were taken by Khomeini, the Shah, there would be these demonstrators in Washington, D.C., talking about the torture that the Shah would do against his enemies and things, and they would actually replicate it. They're, you know, tying, putting their battery on somebody and putting the tin helmet on somebody and beating it to they basically go crazy in there. It's and, you know, that was our guy that was there, and we don't say, hey, tone it down a little bit type of thing. It just, this stuff leaks out, and these were out in the Washington Mall and demonstrating and, well, showing people what was happening.
Having friends like that, for lack of a better word, is useful. I mean, a few of those friends are now no longer friends. Like, Mubarak's gone.
Yeah.
Gaddafi's gone. And Assad, well,
Gaddafi was never a friend. He was somebody we tolerated.
Right.
He was scared to death, also.
I think he was used, too. Okay. In the sense, like, oh, let's send him to Gaddafi.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah. And Assad was that way, too, until recent history. And I think we've just played this game for a long time, and now it's sort of, people are waking up to, man, can we really uphold our values? And I wonder so much how much of this is the left and the press in particular, you know, screaming about this when it's one of their own, how consistent they'll be on this.
Well, the interesting thing is on Khashoggi, they're screaming, but on Yemen?
Yeah.
You haven't heard a peep out of them on Yemen.
And it's terrible what's happening in Yemen.
I mean, I go in and look at the European press, and they have, like, for example, you have a lot of newspapers that have a Cairo correspondent that's reporting on the Middle East and the Daily Mail and things like that. And, I mean, what's going on? Some of the pictures you see,
there
is unbelievable. I mean, there was one picture that was a street, and it was just littered with bodies, kids, women, men. I mean, there had to be 70, 80 dead people in this dirt road type thing.
Well, and it's already a volatile society, and if you make it where people can't eat, they can't get clean water. I think what you're doing is you're creating terrorists. You're creating desperate people that will, some of them will go to radicalism and violence as the solution.
Well, what concerns me is when you have somebody who's bloodthirsty, a Stalin, Hitler-type bloodthirstiness, then that starts permeating everything that you do. And so you kind of like the bloodthirstiness. You like the terrorized Yemen, and you like the killing so many people you're basically trying genocide, you're trying to wipe them out type thing. Those are people that the world should be scared of. And I don't see how we're not trying to say to Saudi, and I'm worried about the age differential here, to the king, like, king, you need to do something about this.
Well, and what might be interesting, if an argument that Salman himself is making behind closed doors is, I have to be this way if you want liberalizing reforms in my country. I need the people that would overthrow me or fight back against what I'm trying to do, what we're both trying to do, to be scared of as hell of me in order for me to liberalize this country, which doesn't make sense from our point of view. But he might have a point. I need to be ruthless in order to push through and change the society. I don't know.
So I have to kill a whole bunch of people so we can have a free
society. Isn't that always the excuse?
Oh, man. News 93.1. Dan Moore Show, we're going to be back with a whole lot more right after this.
The Dan Morris Show.